Just looking on the city website, I saw that in 2015, there's a document and there's a Revelstoke Community Wildfire Protection Plan. Is that plan and that committee still what the city works on for its fire protection?
The plan is still there. It is what we use, as well as updated information that is current, may not be included in that particular plan right now. The plan is in the process of going forward with that. Of course, funding is always a challenge to work on these, especially with the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. It's and you probably noted that the province has changed to a community wildfire resiliency rather than the protection plan. So yes, that's in our plans to update that, but it's still valid. It does need to be updated with more current information, particularly how this climate change has affected us.
Yeah, it feels like the world has changed a lot since 2015, even though it's less than 10 years ago. Is there still a committee that meets regularly?
There is a committee. It's the Revelstoke and Area Emergency Management Program. The program committee kind of slowed down for that period during the COVID and the pandemic and all that. So we're working on bringing that back up to its regular capacity and getting all those people back into the groove.
And in that report that I read from 2015, it did say that wildfire is the biggest natural risk to Revelstoke. And it did talk about how fire breaks, and correct me if I'm wrong, but fire breaks are the biggest mitigation to that. Is that still the case?
Yes and no. The fire break, so fire break is just an area where it's, we'll call it easily defensible. So it might not be free of combustibles, like say a river or a lake would be one of the best. The other things could be hydro right-of-ways, highways, any roads. You know, and as we go further out from the city, then we're looking at other things like old logging roads. Even if they're deactivated, like BC Wildfire will go in and open up those roads. They'll use heavy equipment to clear out that combustible material.
And then this report even mentioned things like wide ski runs and like old growth deciduous forests and stuff like that. I'm wondering, for stuff like inspecting the fire breaks, would that be the role of the city fire department, or would that be more BC Wildfire?
You're quite right. The ski hill is a very good fire break in some senses. Then we've got the golf course is going to be another good one. Anywhere where it's a maintained area, such as people's yards, for example, going through the Fire Smart process removes some of those high hazard materials. So where it's private property, that would be the homeowner's duty to take care of that. And so our Fire Smart it would love to help. So if I can put a plug in for that, call Lauren at the fire hall at 837-2884 and find out more about Fire Smart and ask for a home assessment as well. As far as maintenance of that, if it's let's call it Crown Land, that would be the province, but there really isn't a whole maintenance of that. If it's within the city, we try our best to not allow those to get out of control, if you will. But truthfully, the city doesn't have a lot of areas there that are not maintained, like all of the parks, the green spaces, the multi-use paths, which would be a primary area where the city looks after those as well.
In that report, it mentioned that in 2003 and 2006, there were lightning strikes that started fires near to town, but that they were in areas too steep for them to be fought. Can you talk a little bit about the position that we're in and how vulnerable we are in Revelstoke?
You're right. The mountainous location that we are here, we do have a little bit of a microclimate here in Revelstoke. So you'll notice that things are really green here. Which is great. We've got all of this water behind the dam. We've got really good humidity. I think it was 82% humidity this morning, even though it was like 35 degrees yesterday. We're getting those overnight recoveries, and that really helps keep Revelstoke in a lower risk. You know, we talk about things like lightning strikes that hit the hills around us. So the hills are the target, rather than the lowlands where all the major fuels are. And so when the lightning strikes up on the top of the hill, you can see it. There's a lot of smoke. The Heron Creek fire right now, I think it just went up to 1,200 hectares. So it has grown. And people have seen the columns of smoke, you know, in the late afternoon after the heat and the wind. The fire will pick up and it'll burn itself off overnight and then it'll calm down again. And so the fire that was up on the other side of Mount McKenzie a number of years back, I think it was around 2017 maybe, there's nothing that you can do for that fire. It's on the hillside. There's no equipment get in there. You can bucket helicopter loads of water and that sort of thing, but that can often damage the ecosystem more by the water runoff. And so BC Wildfire will often do the modified response. Well, they'll monitor it. If it looks like the wind or the weather conditions are going to push it away or towards Revelstoke, for example, or any other city, they will take further actions on that. And we're quite lucky that we actually have the Columbia Fire Base here.
When is there any kind of manual or procedure? Like, when are you concerned and when do you start putting protection in place in town or thinking about that?
Those are really dynamic events. I'd love to be able to say that there's one plan that we could activate when certain things, trigger points happen. And that's where we really rely on BC Wildfire's expertise, because they do this year after year, day in and day out. They really know what to do. And so BC Wildfire works closely with communities to provide that information as to whether or not there's this particular fire would become a threat, or if it looks like it's traveling in a particular direction. They will work with the community that's affected and provide updates on those regularly. For example, the Heron Creek fire, it's not a threat. It's 15 kilometers away. It hasn't traveled more than a few kilometers from its original ignition point. And so we just look at the dynamic issues like that. And then we've got things that we really do have to pay attention. I think it's the most important thing. The emergency management needs to pay attention. We look at what happened in various places. We've got Tenerife right now. Over their wildfire has gone crazy. Lahaina just had a massive wildfire again. And then we've got Yellowknife, right? So the Yellowknife, for example, they're doing a lot of proactive work because they have one road in, and their only other option is aircraft and boats. So they reacted and responded appropriately and early. I think that's one of the things that is most challenging, is to help people understand, even though it doesn't seem like it's a real big concern right now, we have to look at the conditions, what the forecasts are on Environment Canada and climate change is really, really on top of that, right? So we get all this information, we make the best decisions, and hopefully the right ones.
I'm wondering, say, like, that thing happened where we have to make some decisions, what is Revelstoke's evacuation plan?
Get people out to a safer location. It's unfortunate. I'd love to be able to tell you that we have a specific plan. We have some guidelines, for example. We've got three directions that we can send people, but Highway 23 South is not really an option if we're going to evacuate a portion or all of the city. We've got the two directions, east and west, on the Trans-Canada Highway. And so those are our choices. We can either go west or we can go east, depending on whether any part of the highway is impacted at all. So we just have to look at the dynamics of it. If we're evacuating, it's going to be on the highway. We do know that. And then if there's anything that impacts either west or east, we would then look at sending people the other direction. It's uncommon that when you have two ways in and out, that both of them would be impacted at the same time. So we're looking at the next cities over and that sort of thing.
And then what about if something happens like evacuating Arrow Heights?
Can you clarify the question?
Just because there's only one way out. So what if...
For the well, there is a concern on the single access with the 4th Street Bridge, but it is a steel bridge. There's not too much that's going to actually damage that. The greatest concern would be during an evacuation from the Arrow Heights or Victoria Heights area is that a vehicle accident would create a bottleneck. That would be a concern. Not very likely. And there's, the number of people that are being evacuated from that side of the Illecillewaet River really doesn't seem like it would be a huge impact. But then we've got things that we have to plan for. Well, what if, right? So we do look at the what ifs and try not to get that paralysis going in there. But certainly one of the recommendations has been taking a good look at that particular issue and making some future plans.
What if there was a fire blocking Airport Way?
What if there was a fire blocking Airport Way? I think there's a couple opportunities there. One of them would be a shelter in place and looking at how that Airport Way would be impacted, say between, I think it's McKinnon and the Illecillewaet River. So if there was a fire in that particular area there, then that would be a fairly good concern. And the question is, what about? And so sheltering in place, we do have some areas that we could send people further away. And then, if it's a wildfire or grass fire, we would take attack that and hopefully reopen that egress route.
I guess the good thing is the airport's on the other side, worst case scenario, if you had to. That's the way I think anyways. What I'm wondering is, why is the water used for fire protection? Why is that treated water stored in the reservoir? Why not use a different source?
If we're talking about firefighting, for structures, the best source of water is a captured water source. So it's a known quantity. The access is close. It's not impacted by things like freezing temperatures, for example, where the surface would freeze over, or perhaps damage piping that was in the river and that sort of thing. Putting the large vehicles right next to the river body is somewhat risky. We don't want that vehicle to be fall off the slope or whatever, because the river edges, of course, they're not really accessible from any built-up roads or anything like that.
So is it common for municipalities to use their treated water stored in a reservoir for fire protection?
Yes. The water system, or a public water system, there's a minimum reserve capacity that communities are expected to maintain specifically for firefighting purposes. And the size of the community and the fire risk and that kind of dictates how many thousands of gallons that may be. Typically, it's a 2 to 4 hour period of a large number of, say, like 1,000 gallons a minute kind of thing. So that's always a reserve capacity kept in the reservoirs for firefighting purposes only. And that's one of the reasons that Director Black has issued the water restrictions, just because of that capacity need.
Does the city have a mobile sprinkler unit?
For a structure protection unit? There's a shared structure protection sprinkler trailer. It's maintained by the CSRD, and it's shared between CSRD, I think it's Seven Arm, Revelstoke, and Golden. Actually, they have several of them.
And I've noticed in Maliqua, when you drive by, they have containers of water placed at intervals for fire protection. Is the reason that we don't do that because we have hydrants?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
How would this fire department or the city alert people if there was an evacuation?
A number of ways. The primary one would be the intrusive alerting through the I believe it's Canada-wide Alert Ready system. So that's intrusive onto your smartphone, and you can't turn that off. So if you're in the area of an evacuation area, you will get that alert. There's also the Alertable app that the city has subscribed to, as we're in partnership with the CSRD. And so we use that for lower level alerts as well. And so we could use that for extreme heat events. We're opening up the community center for that cooling center. It could be used for wildfire evacuations. It could be used to notify a particular area or number of properties in the city. If there's a structure fire, for example, that we felt we needed to evacuate a block. So the Alertable app has a lot of features in it, but you also get the heat warnings and other alerts from the province or from the CSRD just being in this area. It also works on the computer. The great thing about the Alertable app is it's across Canada, and you can set the app to follow you. So no matter where you are, either in around Revelstoke, the CSRD, BC, or Canada, the Alertable app will notify you of anything in the area that you're actually in. So that's a really great feature of the app. I highly recommend it.
I'm wondering, when I spoke with Steve Black, he mentioned that we'd be kind of hooped if the Greeley watershed burns. I'm wondering, is that something that you're aware of as the fire chief, or is that more BC Wildfire that would be aware of protecting that watershed?
Yeah, and I share Director Black's concerns for wildfire within our watershed, because that would affect our drinking water. One thing that a large part of emergency management, and especially planning, is looking at the infrastructure and what it would need to be protected. So BC Wildfire also has an overarching sort of view of that crown land, if you will. And so that would be one of the communications and the concerns between the Unified Incident Command would be to look at protecting infrastructure. Because if you have, if you lose your infrastructure and your government and your livelihoods, you don't really have a community anymore. So it's really important that we do put a lot of effort into protecting that big part of the community, so that people have a place to live and play.
So are you aware of plans in place in case that's threatened, to like actions that would be taken to protect it?
I'm not aware if there's any specific plans, just a general guideline of how we would address concerns such as that.
And how would you?
It would be outside of our particular mandate, so we would work with most likely BC Wildfire to do whatever the decisions. It depends so much on the actual event, mm-hmm. But yeah, we would do our best to work with them. And one of the restrictions that we have as a municipal organization is, so speaking on the fire department boundaries are very specific boundaries legislatively. The emergency management program, we call it RAMP, works within the CSRD Area B. And then, so that would be in CSRD Area B. But there's no specific plans or, you know, like what if a fire started here, what would we do? What if a fire started here, what would we do about those? We have general guidelines that give us some solid information about what to do if a fire starts, but nothing very specific on that.
Do you think there should be more specific plans? Like, is that something you mentioned, that we're updating the plan from 2015? Is that something that you think should be looked at?
Well, certainly hazard and vulnerability risk assessment has looked at a variety of different scenarios. It could be an avalanche, or it could be a highway closure, wildfire, that sort of thing. And then we come up with some guidelines of how we would respond, but nothing specific. If you go down that rabbit hole, a very specific plan, then you end up having to throw it out, or potentially, because it just doesn't fit actually what's happening.
Yeah, it's so hard to predict what's going to happen. Do you think it's a greater risk, Revelstoke, from a wildfire or from like a human-caused fire, maybe a house burning down, spreading? Like, what do you think would be the greater risk? I know this is hypothetical, but just like thinking of the area that we're in and if it's super dry, like what would be more concerning?
In summer, I think our greatest risk is going to be extreme heat events. In the winter, it's probably that snow. The highway gets closed quite often, and there's always going to be a, well, if it's closed for too long, are we going to run out of food? Things like that. So there's a lot of different, I would say, seasonally specific things. So right now, my personal thought would be heat events and possibly just the weather itself.
So you think heat is just like prolonged heat events and citizens being affected by that? That would be your top concern?
Mostly because it affects everybody, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if we had a wildfire, we can do something about it. We can get people out of the way. If it's a house fire, we can do something about that. But it's those weather events that, as intelligent as humans are, we just don't have the ability to change the weather and what's happening around us. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that affect everybody, regardless of your age or where you live, in Revelstoke, or if you live in the south or the north end of Revelstoke, whereas a wildfire or anything like that, it would impact a certain area, and we can do something about that.
You mentioned at the beginning wanting to update the plan from 2015, but funding always being an option. And I know just from paying attention to what's going on in the province, they are spending more money than ever, they're saying, into their BC wildfire programs. So I'm wondering, as a municipality, if you're noticing money for things like communicating fire smarting to homeowners and updating your plan, are you benefiting from all the money that they're investing in that right now?
The Fire Smart that we're doing right now is a grant from the Columbia Basin Trust. There are additional grants that we're in the process of applying for through the Community Resiliency Initiative. And so we're hopeful that we'll get that grant again and continue on the fire smarting process. So those are reasonably well funded through the provincial grant process. And part of it is just resource capacity. Almost every city in BC, I think I've seen several dozens of job opportunities for Fire Smart coordinators and emergency management coordinators. So it's a very in high demand type of work right now. And so there's a resource capacity that goes along with the funding too.
Do you think that homeowners in Revelstoke are getting the message about the importance of fire smarting their property?
I really like to think they are. It's pretty important to me. It's one of the things that people have control over. And, you know, when you do the fire smart actions as well, it really does help bring a little bit of peace to people's lives. They know that they've done something. They know it's going to have an impact on protecting their home and their property and their lives. And I think it's really important that's a step that people can take to put a little bit more peace and comfort into their life.
And how is the city communicating? Do you think there's pretty good communication on people's options and how they can access grants from the CSRD? Do you think people are pretty aware of what they can do?
It's a work in progress. It's still fairly new for most people. There are certain opportunities for homeowners to receive a little bit of a credit back. I think it's about $500 for a completed FireSmart assessment. The first step is to get that assessment done, find out what steps you can take, and have someone with the right eye take a look at your property and give you some recommendations what you can do. The greatest benefit to the homeowner is that if something were to happen in Revelstoke, the intent is that their home will still be standing, that they can come back to.